So you said you're ready?
Yeah.
I'd like to call the November 14th meeting of Ways and Means to order. The departmental budget, personnel. You ready?
Press
it once and then until it goes green. And let go. You can let go. There you go.
Not a lot of changes when it comes to personnel. We did have a requested increase for our confidential secretary to $36 an hour to get closer to the hourly start rate for secretaries at UCSA. We requested an addition of a full-time employee, a personnel assistant trainee. This addition will give us the capability to ensure all transactions are completed in a timely, effective manner. All other increases shown are contractual increases through CSE and UCSA. Our part-time budget remains unchanged. Our expenditures pay increased $26,000 due to the one increase in regular pay, the addition of the SPD and the 2% plus 25 cent increase from UCSA and CSEA, and the 2.5% increase for management. Longevity increased $1,250. We increased education and training by $10,000 to be able to offer more leadership development for our current and future leaders. Labor relations increased $19,000. We have our projected exams for the spring season of 2024. 12 regularly scheduled exam dates, 3 decentralized exam dates. For fall, we have 6 regularly scheduled exams and 1 decentralized. The total cost for our exam monitors will be about $6,566. And that's about the gist of the changes in personnel, if anybody has any questions.
Are there any questions? I'm sorry, so initially it looked like you put in for $9,000 for the training and education, but the execs recommended was an additional $10,000.
Correct.
So the exec's office recommended the additional...
I'm sorry, please say again.
I'm sorry, the exec's office recommended the additional $10,000, or you were...
Yes.
Okay. And then on the next page, the contractual, miscellaneous contractual exam fees. So we've never come close to the $18,000 number. Is there a reason why you think it's going to hit that high?
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry, the miscellaneous contractual expense exam fees. You got it budgeted at 18, but we've only, the most we've ever hit at 10.5.
The 18 is the exam fees, the $18,000 that are put aside for that. And sometimes we hit that, sometimes we don't, depending on how many exams we are able to give the year from the state approved.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. All right. Director Macaluso, you're up.
Green. Okay. Won't go through the whole thing, but we could start off on the organizational structure. We had requested one new position, which is database administrator, which was declined. We did have a number of positions that we converted. One, the deputy director position, was collectively considered a bit redundant because the assistant directors are functional deputies. The idea is we would take the deputy position, convert it to a cybersecurity, a chief information security officer position, a position that is dedicated to cybersecurity, everything from training to penetration testing to a variety of different cyber capabilities to help us build out that practice. And then we have a number of positions that were either upgraded or converted to help support some operational changes there. Any questions?
So as technology changes,
let's say again, use your mic.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So as technology changes and how we approach IS overall changes, you know, how much churn will you see going forward in this structure? Because this looks like a very typical structure, right? But I mean, you know, things like, you know, dealing with AI and, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think the organizational structure of operations, applications, and infrastructure is a pretty solid framework. You think underneath that, things might change as roles get kind of redefined as technology changes and as different risks and opportunities change. We might want to kind of organize things underneath it differently. Like, in fact, this structure is different from the previous year because the thinking is that, like, the real pure infrastructure, meaning network, servers, radio, systems that are pure technology, we want to have a focus on that. And then, like, technical support, which is a bit more... Not that it's not technical, but less technical. It's more like help desk and operations. We kind of moved it under operations because we want to have a focus on a technology expertise. So that was a kind of a symptom of, or a kind of sample of how we might organize it underneath that, those three divisions, if you will.
Yeah. So another thing was, so now, as these roles change, right, do you have a retraining program, or, you know, where you can take existing employees and, you know, as their skills become obsolete, speaking for someone whose skills become obsolete many times,
right,
at IBM, right, do you have a retraining program, or?
It's really multi-pronged, I think, because part of it is, you know, we have to look at the position descriptions as they're defined and see where we need to make modernization to the description and the language and the qualifications, and so sometimes it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And looking to who's the person in that position, it's a little bit harder to make those changes because it's hard to make those changes while a person's inhabiting it.
Right.
But when that position becomes, well, we're thinking ahead that when that those types of opportunities arise, we're thinking along those lines of how we can modernize the language, and then so that when we go to fill that position, we're getting people with skills that are pertinent to the new position description. And then we have an ongoing training platform, that a technical training platform that we have brought since I started, which is called Udemy, which is a real contemporary platform that we get, you know, we identify people, we assign them training material that sort of aligns with their career trajectories and what the department needs.
Great.
So, and it's contemporary, and it's fresh, and it's always dynamic. So it's not stale.
That's just what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to talk about the one position that was not approved, which is the database administrator position. It's something that, at the time, I still think it's a very, really important position because it serves sort of a few purposes. One is all the major systems that we deploy and support all have a database or multiple databases behind the scenes. And in the enterprise space, like, that's a very specialized role. And when you think about an enterprise type of capability, you want to be able to create this resiliency in the databases so that they can stay up, they can fail over, they can do... they can recover from problems. You can maybe even build out a capability which is not uncommon, which is kind of like a database hosting practice that lets you kind of consolidate your database licensing in such a way that you, you know, drive your costs down, but you create greater efficiency because you have a hosting practice for that, and that requires someone with that kind of expertise. But it also opens up opportunities for the county at large to be able to use the person with a database background to be able to look at all the different databases that are in the county that are maybe that we're not aware of, because as people develop, you know, get access databases, for example, it's really common because they're easy for the average user to develop a little database application. Some of that data in that might be useful, and it's an opportunity where can we consolidate some of these databases in a way that that subject matter expertise, when it goes away, the care and feeding of that database can now get preserved somewhere else with a expertise that can be supported, and evolve those databases in a way that has some continuity. But then you can, on top of that, there's also opportunities to then mine some of this data for operational purposes. And so I wanted to just flag that, because I think that from a county perspective, that position could be really valuable.
Question?
Mr. Crystal?
Yeah, and can you explain why that position was denied on the county side?
I cannot.
Right. Can anybody?
Exactly.
The exec team? Can we find out what?
Yeah.
So, sure can.
So would this be, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but almost like a data engineer, kind of like, creating and determining what data can be used across the board, right?
Yeah, ideally they would have those kind of skills to be able to look at data and see where data sets intersect, and where you might have data that you want to quarantine from certain people's views, and where you might want to expose other sets of data. And they have that kind of expertise to also sort of encrypt certain types of fields in the database so that certain eyes don't see it unless you have the right authority to look at that. So there's certain kind of expertise that would come to bear to kind of create a solution like that.
It works the other way too, where you have data that you should share and would be helpful from one department to the next.
Right. And then find out where you've got redundant data, where you've not got two sources of truth for something where you could have one source of truth. Right.
Yeah. Any other questions?
So, Deputy Exec LaValle here, maybe she can answer that question. Why this database administrator was eliminated from the budget?
We'll have to look into it. Our budget director may
need to do it. Okay, thank you.
And as far as our expenses go, we have, it's always a up and down from year, not up, it's often up and down from year to year depending on what kinds of requests come in from other departments and other projects that have been either resolved or need to be extended. So, but overall our budget has been relatively consistent from an expense perspective. I think from 2023 to 2024 we saw an increase in our of about $100,000 from year 2023 to 2024. Some of the expenses went down for select professional services. We had some 2023 some pretty hefty expenses for emergency management and some improvements on the public safety system that were one-time purchases that went down in 2024. And you might see some of the extended maintenance for that extended to 2024. We move more into sort of subscription-based applications and other services. Our periodical expenses, which would fall under, we saw an increase of about $30,000 in that line. Communication expenses, internet. I mean, we support a lot of the public safety infrastructure from fiber to radio towers or redundant circuits for the 911 system to be able to have redundant circuits between Highland and Golden Hill or Highland and Kipsey, so those kinds of things. You see some extensions on that as public safety wants to build up better resiliency in that environment. So you see some of our internet expenses go up to support that kind of capability. Some of our software expenses have actually gone down from 2023 to 2024. Some of it, we've rolled off some software that we no longer need. Some backup software that's been replaced by other software that is more that's part of a comprehensive package. And computer equipment, most of the expenses for computer the increase in expenses are attributed to some of the departmental requests that came in. Hall of Records has some significant scanners that they need to do some high volume archival scanning and digitization, flatbed scanners, and also other types of ancillary support equipment for that type of environment. So some of that expenses have gone up. Any questions on that page, that's the expenses page? And our regular pay, I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. We have 25 employees, I think, from the difference between this year and next year is that next year we expect to have one employee go part-time and we'll backfill that position full-time. We have a significant need for contract management expertise. So the person that we anticipate going part-time will be primarily focused on managing all of our 40-plus contracts and the life cycle of the contracts and the extensions, et cetera, and the monitoring of the contract deliverables and those types of things, which is not a full-time position, but and then we can then backfill that position for someone that's more operationally suited for the role that person's vacating. And we, as I mentioned, we have our Chief Information Security Officer a plan for 2024, and we mentioned this, and I think in our previous discussion about pay for folks who are working after hours.
Yeah.
That is something that we need to do this year because I think we expect to have some outages this year that we want to make sure we have some coverage for that. And that's it.
All right. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Right.
Moving along to Director Karras. You're up.
Thank you very much. Natalie, I have a couple. So for the legislative members, I have additional copies coming for all of you of the information that was provided to you by Natalie with the budget worksheet report as well as the PL listing. Behind those main documents is also just my rough talking points, just so you have reference for that. Yes. So in the interest of time, I'll continue talking while we're waiting for the other copies to arrive. The first line that I want to talk about is the regular pay line. You'll notice from 2023 to 2024, this line increased $159,000. The majority of this increase, $153,000, reflects the two grants positions that were originally allocated to the budget in the finance department in 2023 and then subsequently moved to the budget department. The remainder of the increase is going to be related to cost of living increases for those employees in that department.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Absolutely.
Why are the actuals so low compared to the adopted budget?
So that was the next point that I was going to make. Our grants positions have been hard to fill, and we actually had interviews scheduled again on Monday. For a position, and about an hour before the interview, the individual indicated that they had gotten a better offer and decided to withdraw his consideration. The other reason for the vacancies is there's a financial analyst, which I'll talk about in a few moments, that has been vacant since May, and then my position, while I was serving as the interim commissioner of finance, I was being paid from the finance department rather than the budget department. So for a significant portion of the year, this department has been a number of vacant positions.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
To go back to the two grant positions. So do you have any prospects at this point for either one of them?
At the moment, no.
And it was a salary?
I think it's a combination of factors. We had two promising candidates earlier this year. We extended offers to both of them. One of the individuals ended up having to withdraw because of housing considerations. They were going to be relocating from the city, and they were having issues finding affordable housing up here. The other individual, her daycare fell through, and she was unable to piece together a daycare plan that would enable her to be able to work. So, which is unfortunate, and you know, we try to be supportive as much we can, especially in those situations. But you know, for her, it was a situation where she really needed to focus on finding childcare first. So, I am disappointed. Both would have been really strong candidates, and was looking forward to working with both of them. And we're finding now, as we're at canvassing and looking for these positions, it's becoming harder and harder to find people that are willing to take it. So,
didn't we already increase these salaries once before?
Correct.
Okay, that was my recollection. Because
we
couldn't get applicants.
That is correct, Chair. While we're here, the other thing I want to point your attention to, on the second page on the PL document, it provides the backup to the regular pay line. There's a number of reclassifications that I am proposing to be included in this budget. This is to, one, be consistent with the adopted local law establishing the Department of Budget that was approved earlier this year by the legislature. So the first thing is the Director of Innovation, Budget Innovation, has been eliminated, if you will, and a new budget director has been put in its place. The other thing I've done is the Deputy Director of Innovation. That position has been reclassed to Deputy Budget Director for Grants and Program Management. And the third thing that's been proposed is that the financial analyst title be reclassified to budget analyst. Finally, the other thing I want to point out to the committee, in order to comply and standardize the hours, the staff in this department work a variety of 70-hour work weeks, 80-hour work weeks. There's been times where these positions have been proposed at 75 and unilaterally changed. Up to 80 hours is to make them all 70-hour employees. And this would be consistent with paragraph C1 of the personnel policy manual. I feel it's important that we, you know, as this department's been established, that we work towards making sure that we're aligned to the rest of the county, and that our standard hours are consistent with policy.
Chair, sure.
In making that change, do you anticipate overtime?
So one of the things, all these employees in this department are management employees, so there will be no overtime costs.
Everyone in the department.
Okay.
Yep. All right. So that answers that question. Good. Thanks.
Yep.
So just in relation to that, so, you know, while the total number doesn't look like it increases very much when you take into account the difference in hours, it's as low as 12% increase for one of the people, 16 for another, 17 for another, and 44% for another percentage increases.
What's the 44% one?
The grant administrator manager.
That should not be. Those positions, those grant managers were always 70 hours.
It wasn't related to hours, but that position itself has gone up by 44% from the 23 budget.
The intention was for those grants positions to only receive a 2.5% COLA, so we'll go back and review, but...
Separate. Does everybody have this?
Yeah,
you should have this in your packet. Chair Bartow?
Actually, I want to revisit my last question. Is there, maybe not for right now, but can you provide an analysis of which, you're talking about bringing them into continuity at 70 hours, but as I'm thinking this through, if you have people who have been classified at 75 or 80 and now you're dropping them to 70, while they will not be getting overtime, they're going to get additional comp time. I mean, functionally, I don't normally think of any of these employees, and I've talked about this before, as hourly employees, but functionally, when you drop them to 70 from, are you pointing at, when you drop them to 70 from 75 or 80, it's a functional per hour raise, and it means that they're going to get more comp time. They're going to accrue comp time more quickly. I don't know which ones, I mean, I have the document in front of me, but I don't know which ones were at 70, which ones were at 75, which ones were at 80, when they were at 75, when they were at 80. But it's something that gives me pause, and other departments have talked about it as well, and have asked for it, these hourly shifts in thinking, which then results in functionally getting more comp over time, and the thinking of them as being higher per hour employees, which not on its face is automatically a bad thing, but I'd like to really understand across the line of each employee the history of where their hours were, because you just gave a narrative that they were kind of all over the place. Can you provide that backup?
Yeah, I can provide that backup. I mean, for instance, the grants positions have always been set at 70 hours since they were established earlier this year. The financial analyst was at 80 hours, and that position I actually just brought down to 70 hours. It did not change the hourly rate, aside from providing a 2% COLA.
Wait. What do you mean you didn't change? If you took it from 80 to 70, you're saying you adjusted the salary?
I adjusted the salary for that position, yes.
Okay.
And then the two deputy budget director positions, they were... I looked at what our deputy commissioners of finance make, as well as our deputy comptroller, which is proposed at, and the deputy clerk of the legislature financial, that their salary is. Those salaries align to all. They're all the same on an annualized basis. And then myself, that position, I don't earn comp time.
Yeah.
So.
Your position is, yeah, it's sort of outside of it.
Yeah.
All right, so Deputy Budget Director, you're saying when it was Deputy Director of Innovation, it was at 80 and now it's down to 70?
It's now down to 70, and I believe when it was approved in 2022, it was approved at 75 hours, that then Budget Director unilaterally made them 80-hour employees and did not increase their rate of pay.
What year was that?
22. I'm sorry, their annual pay.
Ms. Monica.
So is there not enough, when you go down to 70, I mean, just logically, I'm thinking there's only 70 hours of work every 2 weeks. Is that the case?
For our department, one of the things that's difficult for our department is that the nature of the work is cyclical, right? This time of year, myself and my staff are working more than a 70-hour work week. As we get into the winter and the early spring, we're going to be working on annual reports. There's a number of additional things that I want this department to be doing. We've talked about the vacancy savings piece. There's additional work that I think we should be doing related to that, and we need staff to be able to do that. But I do think that leaving these employees at 80 hours for the entire year does not make sense based on our workflow.
Could there be something else they could maybe do if they didn't have enough work to do in a week or two? Essentially, what I'm concerned about is all this really does is make it easier to get to build comp time. And I feel like, especially in the finance department, where we're so behind to the point where we're hiring firms, certainly there's something we could find these individuals in budget to go help out with around the county. Makes them comfortable when, to me, a high-paid salary like this for a management position is you put in the work. I mean, this country was built on people just doing the work. Now we're getting down to, well, let's move them down to 70 hours. They'll
earn a ton of comp time. The fringe that we're giving away in this county, which we're going to talk about later, is already pretty intense. So I don't see this. I mean, I think people should be happy with the jobs they have, do the job. I don't think it should be this easy to rack up comp time. We all see, I have a lot of rank and file union members complaining to me about what's online, and they're seeing what all these management people are making with overtime and comp time, and it's pretty alarming when government becomes the highest paid, the easiest way to make 100, 150 grand in the county. And I think we got to reel it back in, and this is the opposite of reeling it back into me. I don't know how my colleagues feel, but I just assume go to 40 hours and keep all the salaries. I mean, we could talk here or there about a salary, but make it 40 hours across the board. Let's make this county work. And if you don't have anything to do, we'll find some for you to do, because there's departments all over the county that aren't getting things done and could use help.
Mr. Yeah,
so earlier you spoke about aligning the hours with other similar positions throughout the country, the county. I don't know if Legislator Maloney was here for that explanation. So if you wouldn't mind going back over that a little bit again.
Absolutely. So part of the thought process on this is to align to our personnel policy manual, which states that with the exception of, I believe it's the emergency management department, the sheriff's office, and probation, all county offices operate on a 70-hour work week. So what I'm looking to do here is I'm looking to align to county policy.
I'd like to explore that, to go the other way. Who wrote that? When did we decide that we were going to be a 70-hour work week and then look for every reason to make everybody 70 hours?
I believe that
the overtime is through the roof.
I believe the policy was adopted by the legislature.
Okay. Well, I'd rather go the other way with that, to be honest with you. Let's work. Right? Let's work. And let's cut off, figure out why we're running all this overtime and why it seems like so much management is making extra money. I want to live in a world where we're making $100,000 a year. You're not nickel and diming, especially government nickel and diming, every time you work over 70 hours. But we need 11 other people to kind of go down that road and explore that policy and make Ulster County work.
Mr. Camp?
Thank you. So, if I'm not mistaken, CSCA-based week is 35 hours?
That is correct.
Right. So you're aligning with the vast majority of the employees of the county.
That's correct? Thank you. That is correct.
Just one last point. I'd like to be I come from a world, whether it's a coach, whether you're talking about any kind of service, the idea that the people at the top do more than even the people under them, that's the kind of conversations I want to have, where you're making $100,000 a year, many of us drive take-home vehicles, cell phones, health insurance for cheaper, all those things. I'd like to be in a county where we go, you know what, we're going to ask our people at the top to work the hardest. And it's not exactly the salt mines.
If I may, the only thing I would like to add to your comment, and it's well heard, is that, you know, I'll speak for myself. I'm not afraid to put the work in. I think a number of legislators have seen me, and others have seen me here late. You know, this is an important job that I have, that my department has, and you know. I can only speak for myself, and in that, you know, I will put the work in. I do put the work in, and I'm here late at night. I'm here doing work on the weekends, and I think that's what is expected and what is right in order to make sure that the product that we have, that I'm presenting to you and to the county executive and on behalf of our employees, in order to make sure that we're able to effectively and efficiently run this county, requires that, and I've personally believe that is the right thing for me to do, and I try my best to be able to do that and put the work in so that we're able to give a good product.
And on that, do you fill out an alternate work week and get paid extra for it?
No.
No.
Nope.
Good.
Can you back for a second? You said the deputy budget director positions, you only increased by COLA. You said it was 2.0.
Which positions?
You said the two positions, you only increased it by the COLA amount, which I thought you said was 2 point something.
2.5, yeah, for the grants positions, yeah.
Well, for the grant position, yes. That's what you were saying. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I thought you said for the deputy budget.
No.
Okay.
And I'll look into the one issue that you raised, Chair, about the 44%, because that is not the intent. Those positions, as I understood it, were $75,000 each, and there's a 2.5% growth on that, unless it's comparing what it was when it was originally adopted as part of the 23 budget and then takes into account the raises that were given when these were moved from finance to budget.
You just take a look at it.
So you have not put in for comp time over the last month or two?
No.
I'm
okay. Yeah.
At 80. Now, if you went down to 70, would you be able to put in for an all
nope.
work
week? As a department head...
It won't matter for you.
Yeah, apologize for cutting you off. No. No, as a department head, I would not be entitled to comp time.
All right.
If we're good on the regular pay, I'll be quick with the other items, but I do think it's important to talk about some of the items here. So a number of the expense lines, and I'll try to be quick because I recognize the time. You'll notice there are increases to a number of expense lines. The reason generally for that is going to be that the budget department, as a part of the finance department previously, utilized a lot of supplies and other funding sources with the Department of Finance. What I'm looking to do here is actually capture the costs as I see and expect what the department will need for 2024 and be able to put them in the department so that we're accurately reflecting what my costs are as a separate department.
Thank you. Right. Sheriff Figueroa, you're up.
Good evening, everyone. Where do you want me to start?
I think the previous questions were mostly just about some of the capital, project.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the major ones, if you could just explain.
So I'll go
that.
Through them quickly. First one is the Sheriff's Brazos upgrade. And this is basically replacing the New York State Police track system. The New York State Police went through a new system called NISH, and we have had issues with getting customer service from them. So we have decided that the best move forward, as they're moving away from this system, is that we upgrade our system. 80% of the agencies in this county uses a law enforcement records management system, and they also will be utilizing this Brazos upgrade. And this is for traffic tickets and accident reports. This is a traffic ticket accident reporting system. The next one is the Sheriff's Facility Garage and Impound Yard. As you know, this has been an ongoing issue with me as far as being the sheriff. When I took over in 2019, a lot of our equipment was outside in the wintertime. I came from the Marine Corps, the aviation side of the Marine Corps, and if you leave stuff outside, the corrosion control cuts the life of the equipment usually in half. We had stuff in fire departments. We had stuff outside. We ended up leasing the old Central Hudson garage areas to put stuff some of the stuff away. I know when the issues with the law enforcement center, when they first built it, they never built the garage for all the equipment that this office has. So we have requested the last couple of years an upgrade, and of course the impound yard that was up at Golden Hill was shut down and moved, and we're in the process of getting an impound yard. The second part about that garage, with the new laws involving emergency orders, removing weapons, we're running out of room to put all these long rifles at, and this building would be utilized as an additional evidence control area, as well as, well, we had a homicide a couple of years ago and there was a vehicle involved. We had to use the state police captain's parking spot to review and do and inspect a vehicle that was evidence. We don't have an area for cases involving cases involving homicide that there's a vehicle involved. So that's why this is a pretty important project.
Sure. It says location 380 Boulevard. This is where the garage is going to be built?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So 2024 is for the design for the building?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
The next capital, I believe, is a sheriff Axon body-worn cameras, and this is the continuation of the road patrol getting their body-worn cameras. As you recall, we had the Panasonic system that we purchased, and the warranty was out on them, and we had to replace them. And that was before the murder of George Floyd. After the murder, we realized that the Panasonic is not what we need. And we needed something that would save us a lot of space on the server. So we went with the iCloud, and Axon has that. They also have evidence.com. Which makes it easier for prosecutors and defense attorneys to download directly via the system and save us a lot of money in server space. The other important thing about the Axon camera, if you folks remember, is New York State Police has it, Kingston Police Department has it, and anyone that takes unholsters their weapon or taser within 30 feet, all the cameras go on. So that transparency is so urgently needed in today's world of policing.
Yes,
sir. Yeah.
So thinking about discovery in the DA's office, they have a similar system to download anything that's recorded on the Axon system?
It goes directly to them, and they have access to it. And that's what's great about the program. Instead of using server space and then having them put it on their server, that's no longer the case. It goes to an iCloud. And they have immediate access to it.
Thank you.
The second part of that Axon is the Axon camera in the detective's room. And we're just conforming with New York State law requirements for juvenile interviews. Again, evidence.com is important, discovery is important. And to upgrade the detective's room, it has a system that's over 15 years old. It was just time to use it, and why not use it? System that we're already using, which is Axon.
Mr. Mark?
I just had a quick question going back to the garage in Newtown Yard, which I happen to think is something that is needed and is a capital project that we need to focus on. We've had a lot of capital projects in the county go over estimates pretty rapidly recently, and this seems like some pretty reasonable numbers for 2025. Where did we get these numbers? You know, how did we?
Well, we went to buildings and grounds because, honestly, law enforcement, I don't want that expertise.
Yeah, exactly.
It is my people. So we went to buildings and grounds, and they came up with the numbers.
Did we hire, I'm trying to remember, did we go out and do we have any idea how, did we get any help outside the county with these numbers, or is this just buildings and grounds coming up?
I can get you the answer, but I'm not sure how they came up with those numbers, but it came from buildings and grounds.
Okay.
Sure. Thanks. While you're going back to building the grounds, and this is, we just did a space study. I would guess that I would ask if we could check with other departments that may have sensitive storage that would make sense that while this space may suit your space needs, we may need a bigger building, and since it's a secure location, maybe there's an opportunity now. We don't just build to the needs of your department, but maybe there's, I don't know, IT, maybe they have some secure needs where storage at that location would make sense in a part of the building. So instead of just building, I forgot the name of the square footage that you're proposing, but doubling it maybe. So if you could bring that back to buildings.
Well, we actually did this a few years ago, Mr. Chair, with the buildings and grounds because they were looking for a building. And I guess the numbers, real estate numbers have changed when those first estimates went out. And evidence is important. Keeping evidence close to the sheriff's office with security parameters are important, and that's why I would prefer to keep it in that of the law enforcement center. I'm not opposed to looking at other locations, but we have been down this road already, we try to go with buildings and grounds, and the numbers again, these were estimated numbers, and when they went to look for a place, the numbers doubled.
Okay.
So that's why we're at where we're at today.
I'm not suggesting you go to them. I'm actually suggesting they go to you. This be built at your location, but have room in there in a larger building for storage for them at the substation.
I don't think we have that kind of room because we're using an existing area where they would have built an extra housing unit. We had to get permission from the State Commission on Corrections to get that approval from them to put that building at that location. And even with that building, we're not going to have the full amount of space that we require for the equipment that we have.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Do you know if there's a prefab building?
I believe it is, sir. Yes, sir.
So that would explain how you could pretty much estimate the cost pretty consistently.
Yes, sir.
Right out of a catalog almost.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did the firm that we just hired to do the space study, were they in contact with you? Did they ask?
No. I believe because we're looking to do a recreation area at the jail, they were going to contact us regarding that, but not this project.
But the space study's done, right? So you were never contacted?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So we have real space needs, and the space study never went up to
I'm not 100%
I
sure.
Fault, but
I can find out.
Should have contacted you.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. It's a big building, but I can find out. Going to continue with the Axon in-camera upgrades. Again, the cameras that are in dashboards of the police, the 32 patrol vehicles, are presently Panasonic, and their warranties have expired. And in the keeping of the same system, which is Axon, and the explanations I gave before. The jail Axon body cameras, again, we had spoke about this a few years ago, and what's great about this is that we're getting a grant of $248,000 to offset the cost. We've been the only jail, one of the only jails in the Hudson Valley, that our corrections officers have body cameras in the facility, which I think is a great benefit to us when it comes to liabilities and issues at the county jail, especially when you have one corrections officer overseeing up to 30 individuals by himself.
Was that state money, the grant?
Sir?
Was it state money, the grant?
Yes, it was. Of course, the upgrading of the jail kitchen and laundry equipment. We had a jail, at the jail laundry, we had a fire a couple years ago because one of the dryers were old and need a replacement. And most of this equipment was put in place in 2007, so it's time to start upgrading this stuff. The license plate readers, these are stationary ones. To post them, one will be at the traffic circle in Kingston, and the other one would be on the outskirts of Port Ewing and 9W. We have a Division of Criminal Justice Services model policy that's required by the state of New York. These are for criminal cases only and nothing else. And I say that because I know there are members in our legislature that are concerned about privacy. But when we're on the roads, you know, and public safety and whether crimes are committed, it is my duty as a sheriff to make sure that we have the proper equipment to make sure that something happens, that we're able to track the individuals that are responsible for their crimes.
Okay.
Thank you, Sheriff, and thank you for saying that. I'm one of those members that's concerned not so much how you use it in those circumstances, but to make sure that the policy includes how long you keep the information for, the destruction of information, because obviously you're gathering more information than you need. You're gathering all the information, so I just want to make sure that the rest of the information, not the information you're using in relation to criminal investigations, but the other information, that there is a policy in place for destruction of that and length of time to keep that, et cetera.
I can email you a copy of our policy, and I will get back to you on the actual time frame, because we have several different companies that we use when it comes to our license plate readers. Up to this particular one, I will get that information for you.
Thank you.
And I'll also email the chair a copy of our policy.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
you. So these companies, they you know, it'll be in your policy how long they hold the data. But is there a way to transfer it immediately to the county and then have them erase it? In other words, I don't like the idea of a private company having all that information when it really is, and nobody has a qualm about law enforcement using it or any other public safety area using it, but a private company, you know, I know we can put in our contract you can't use it, but, you know, I would much rather see them offload that data immediately, you know, within, say, a shift, 12 hours, 24 hours, whatever it be, and then they erase it off their servers, and then you guys take care of the backup locally rather than having some other company, you know, house our data that we really don't know what they're doing with that, right?
So I would say that for the purposes of law enforcement, again, this is for criminal purposes only. Sometimes a crime occurs today and we don't know about it until 6 months later. And to have access to information that was 6 months ago is important to law enforcement. And but I would definitely look to see if the actual time frames. Some of the stuff we are responsible for and we dispose of it after 5 years. Others, I will have to find out and get back to you.
Yeah, so I'm not so concerned. I'm much more concerned with what you just said. I would much rather have you guys have an infinite amount of ability to pull that data 5, 10, 20 years, I don't care. But I don't like the idea that the license plate reader company also has it that long. See what I'm saying?
So I think they're also regulated legislator in the state. The state, you know, law enforcement wouldn't be dealing with these companies if they're going to be selling this information to anybody else. Yeah. It's strictly for law enforcement.
Right. And our hospital was hacked 2 weeks ago. I'm just saying, you know.
I understand.
That there are concerns that as a law enforcement agency, you guys could probably do a better job of protecting that data and that information than a private company will. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe work with Alan and see if you can figure something out. But that would be something that I would like to see. You know, get it out of the hands of the private sector. Get it where it belongs in law enforcement and public safety. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, just along the lines of that, so I'm sure recently you know, you're aware that there was a auto theft in Ellenville and the vehicle wound up being found in, well, I guess somewhere back here after it had already gone to Albany. The throughway cameras, when you pass the toll line, that doesn't track like this kind of stuff. I just find that unbelievable.
So it's, ironically, even to get easy pass information is pretty tough. If it goes to law, subpoenas, and that's like in most of this information, especially when you're dealing with outside entities like the New York State Thruway. I worked in the private sector for 5 years with the Hertz Corporation, and they had license plate readers that they utilized throughout the country. The private companies that they use are not these companies. The private companies that they use are companies that have license plate readers on tow trucks, and those are the ones we should be really worried about because there's no regulation on them. These are regulated by the state of New York, and they're regulated by the policy of the Division of Criminal Justice Services. And I just wanted to make that point.
So this system would have caught that if EPD had known that there's a vehicle taken, they could have reported the license plate missing or stolen, and then this system would have picked up on something like that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I think that's the last one. I got one more. The Oracle trailer. The sheriff's. The importance of this is that it deals with education and awareness, a key component of what we're trying to change the mindset of people that are afflicted with addiction. The trailer that we have now was donated by folks that lost loved ones. It was used, and it's in need of repair every time we take it out. And so we're asking to replace that with a new one. As you know, the opioid responses county law enforcement is a program that we've been working to help people get into rehab. And although our overdose numbers are still pretty high, our fatalities, thank God this year so far, are beginning to flatten. And we're going to continue to do what we're doing. If we weren't doing what we were doing, I would say the numbers would be a lot worse.
I just want to say I really appreciate the program, and I know how much foot traffic these trailers get. I've seen you at events, and it just gets lines of people coming through it, so I'm glad you're replacing it. I think it's a good money investment.
Thank you.
Any other questions,
Mr.
Chair? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, moving into the agenda, Resolution 596. Can I have a motion? Second. Discussion? Mr. Gale?
So I exchanged some emails with Legislator Erner over the past couple of days, and you know, we have programs in place right now that aren't fully utilized at this point. I know that we still have time to go in the contract, but like I said to Legislator Erner, you know, where's the data to justify creating these positions in the county when we can, you know, use an outside agency to do the same thing, right, for a lot less money and a lot less bureaucracy? Because one thing that always bugs me is, you know, once it comes into the county, now we have, you know, a manager, a director, a deputy, you know, I ain't got a bureaucracy involved that we wouldn't necessarily have if we were subcontracting it out to a private entity or a not-for-profit, whatever it is, right? So my main concern is this, like, I just honestly don't see the justification, right, for this department. You know, I know this is just a public hearing, you know, but I would really like more information on the justification. And Legislator Erner just told me he hasn't seen data either. He's just anecdotal data and, you know, conversations with people who maybe have felt like they could have used better representation. But there's actually no real hard data to say that. The data that I've seen, you know, says that the service is being provided and the people that actually follow through, you know, get the services and the representation that they need. So I'm wondering if we're, you know, solving a problem that doesn't exist with this department, quite honestly.
Yeah, I'll just add to that, and I said the Fed laws and rules. I think we're going to the most extremely expensive option before trying other steps in between. I think the report that we received, although it's limited in the data that it supplied, I also don't think it shows this great need that we can't already accomplish with legal services and potentially other contracts to see how that goes first and to start off a whole department here at the county. As some of us have seen, once we start something, it's very, very hard to unring a bell around here and walk it back. So, but Chair Bartels.
Thank you. I voted to move it to the floor in laws and rules, and I will remain consistent in that vote. But in terms of voting to approve it, since that time, I've looked more closely at, we got the documentation that evening from the contract with legal services for the work that they've done. And I have real concerns about what they've been able to execute on a fairly significant contract, if that reporting is correct. Between now and then, I would want to follow up. I mean, if I recall of the, you know, of the 24 cases that were before them, 4 were resolved and 3 were resolved because 1 didn't respond and 2 were not appropriate or something. So 1 reached a resolution and it didn't say that it was a legal resolution, said it was some kind of partial resolution. So that gives me concerns that we have an outside contract to provide basically essentially these services. And at least on the page, it seems lackluster, which would say that this may be a wanting way to go about it. I would say again, and I think it's Legislator Stewart who brought up this idea about actually expanding on, I'm going to call it bridge funding, but a program to provide the equivalent, it's not exactly a loan, but support for paying rent, because again, these become really complex cases and the bulk of them are probably before the courts for non-payment, and that's another way that we could effectively keep people in their homes by helping to bridge that gap as we figure that out. And I know there's state funding for that, but I think it's safe to assume that it's nowhere near enough. I have concerns, but to remain consistent, and because I spoke with Legislator Erner about it. I will support it going to the floor, but in terms of a vote to approve it or a vote on a budget amendment, I'm gonna want that information between now and then about how that intersects with the program that's already in place.
Senator Criswell.
I really like what Chair Bartels is talking about in terms of temporary support for folks who are being threatened with being unhoused, because there's often a window. Say somebody loses a job and they can't gain employment, and then they get in arrears and they get threatened with eviction. If they could have some sort of a cushion to get them through that time, to get another job, to get back on their feet, that would serve us well in the county, because then we're not seeing all those downstream costs that would be associated with somebody who's unhoused and what we'd have to do there. So I think if we can take a proactive approach like what you're talking about, I think that would be really positive.
Debbie, there?
I agree, and I just wanted to expand on that. I made this point at a couple of committees, but there is a state rental assistance program that the legislature approved a few months ago. It's $400,000. It's being administered by Catholic Charities, and last I spoke with them a couple of weeks ago, there were 5 people that were working through the eligibility process, so there's a lot more room in that program to go. However, we're still working, we do see the need, so we're working with Legislator Stewart, who has proposed doing another rental assistance program, supplementary. Maybe there are eligibility requirements for that program that could be expanded upon. So we're researching that based on a program that the planning department implemented during COVID. $200,000 was the size of that program, and it ended up assisting around 65 people. So we're looking into both of those rental assistance programs. In terms of the contract, we really are basically in the middle of a contract with Legal Services of the Hudson Valley. I just got a follow-up email on some questions we asked them on the report that they sent us, which I will share with everybody. But the basic gist of it is that they've opened 70 cases since the program started. Over 50 of them are still open, and it can take many months. They don't anticipate these cases to be settled until like April, which is basically the end of the year for that contract, and maybe even after that to August. So it's going to take some more months for those cases to be resolved. The majority of them are non-payment right now, and so they can't really, we ask them, like, do you have any opinions as to what the potential outcomes of these cases are? They can't really say. So given that there's over 50 cases that are still open right now, it seems like we should really let this program that we funded for a year make its way through, and then from there figure out what to do, if it makes sense to add new headcount. The other thing is we did add a new homelessness and housing unit within DSS that is supposed to tackle a lot of these issues. The idea is that, I think Legislator Erner mentioned that the Westchester model is going to do a lot of referring, not necessarily litigating in-house. Our unit, the people in the unit, should absolutely be referring as well and taking on some of that work. So I think I'll leave it at that, but I've mentioned some of our other concerns with this proposal, mostly around expanding right now, adding additional headcount at this time. We had over 80 requests for headcount, and I know that there are a lot of budget amendments that have been introduced, so I think it's important to look at all the headcount requests at one time together.
Thank you. Mr. Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me a chance to speak once again on this. As you know, last week at Laws and Rules, I did come out in favor of this, the concept of this. I do think this proposal needs a lot of work. I don't think we can get that work done this year. But again, I will support it going to a public hearing and let the public weigh in on it.
Mr. McCann.
Thank you. So my concern with going to a public hearing with incomplete information, we're going to go to a public hearing, and, of course,
we will have people who will come and be in favor of it. I don't think anyone would be against it. I'm not against helping people who are being evicted, not in any way, right? So I know that a public hearing would make us all feel good, you know, but we all, I think everyone has, I don't want to speak for everyone, but the folks who have spoke have concerns about how this is structured. The executive's office has said that they can't see us adding more headcount and adding a department, things like that. I happen to agree with that. When we have programs in place to basically do the identical work that this department would do already, and we haven't even given them a full year to see if it's an effective program, right? I would rather, postpone the public hearing until we have a better handle on what we're going to present to the public, because I don't like the idea of presenting a half-baked cake to the public when we all know that it's half-baked. You know, I think that's disingenuous. It gives a false sense of hope to people who may want to use this program, because we will have a public hearing and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts of the resolution and developing department, and we're a year away from that, really 6 months at least before that department becomes functional. But we'll have a public hearing in December, and January, February roll around, they'll be calling us, hey, I need this help. And we'll say, well, it's not baked yet, right? And then if there's any substantive changes to this law, then we will have to have another public hearing, right? So, for me, I would much rather wait and present the fully functioning resolution with all the I's dotted, T's crossed to the public than to put something out there that we all, most of us agree is not complete at this point.
I don't necessarily disagree with parts of what everybody's here said, but something that I was just talking to somebody from the public the other day, and they said, and they're in the know, and they said something about all the postponements, and then what do you guys do in that month? Many times we don't do much. So I just think that one of the biggest tools in our toolbox that we never use is the special committee, and I think any legislative term that 15 to 20 special committees aren't formed, we're probably not getting nearly as much done as we could. And I think this is another example. Phil is willing to put the time in. A couple of months ago, we probably should have, when he first started talking about this, put together a special committee for other legislators that want to be a part of it and could. Let's see what comes out of it. At times, we'll probably get a lot out of extra meetings, getting together and focusing on one topic and rolling up our sleeves, you could bring some of these individuals that are experienced frustration with, an outsourced service and get to the bottom of what we need to do. What you come out of it with is recommendations and policies and real action and data, and we never do it. So as we get to the end of this term, I hope at the beginning of next term, that there's a group of us that are really willing to start putting some of these committees together and rolling up our sleeves and spending hours and hours and hours on one specific topic.
Thank you. And I'll just say, again, we acknowledge that there is a problem. The question is, what is the problem? And then what is the potential solution? We don't know that yet because, to the executive's point, we're still in the middle of this contract. We don't know what the actual needs are going to be until we see the data from the, a contract that we put in place purposely to address these issues. So that's why putting a public hearing forward is, to illustrate Kim's point, disingenuous. We don't have all the facts. We don't have all the information. And to expect the public to weigh in on something that we ourselves don't even know the full extent of, I just think it's not good. All right, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So I hear the objections, I hear the criticisms. I wish I had those data. I know that the organizations we are contracting with have told us that we need to do this, that in and of itself doesn't give that data, but they were responsible for helping to advance that in Westchester. I really hope that we are able to put this housing and homelessness unit online. I understand it won't include any lawyers, and legal assistance is something that is a major need that I hear from all the departments and the public. I'm excited that this along with the contract we already have, doesn't just do evictions, but this office as well would not just do evictions, and it would bring more housing attorneys into Ulster County, where there's a lack of that right now. Like, we would have to hire two expert attorneys, and there's no guarantee that the firms that we contract with can do that. That was one of the things they explained to us. There's a nationwide shortage of lawyers in rural parts of the United States, and housing attorneys specifically. And by offering a good salary here, and the opportunity for that office head to actually litigate, which is the difference between what Westchester proposed is going to do and what we would do. We would actually, the office head could take cases themselves, as could the other attorney. It would be up to them whether they then thought they should outsource to any of the nonprofit partners that we have. But I do understand the objections. One way or the other, I'm sure we'll continue to fight for keeping folks in their homes in Ulster County. So I'm happy to hear your vote either way, up or down now. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Amani?
Just one last thing, and I understand not putting something that's half-baked up, but as we're looking to collect data and figure out exactly what we need to do, sometimes public comment, the 20 or 30, 40, 50 people that come, and their testimony ends up being not just a motivational factor for us to really put something to the top of our list, call a special committee, but sometimes it literally provides data and the experiences that we need to formulate. Just food for thought.
All right. Well,
can I make a motion to postpone this and let us get some of this data? Let Legislator Erner see if he can round up some information, some testimony, something, you know, that would help us along here. I'm really concerned about having a public hearing, knowing that we're not putting something up there that's ready for prime time. Very concerned about that. And I understand that, yes, we probably could get valuable information, but that this doesn't prevent us from doing that anyway, right? Legislator Erner can go out and find these very same people that would be invited to the public hearing and have them, you know, give, you know, a written testimony to a committee. You know, we still have time. You can form the subcommittee now, right? You know, we're still in session for six more weeks this legislature, right? And maybe we can have something for the end of December, our last meeting there. I'm not one that will like to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. This is there's a need. I agree. It's the degree of the need that I don't quite understand.
All right, do you have a motion? Is there a second for postponement?
I'll second it.
Especially in line.
I was just going to say, you know, we did quickly put a special committee together. As long as we appoint the members before the end of the year, if Phil was appointed, he would carry on and see that he would be on that committee until it was over. So for the next couple of months, even though you didn't run again, you could be coming up here working on this with a couple of legislators that are still here. It's an interesting point, and maybe if this does need work, maybe a postponement isn't the end of the world if there's an agreement here that let's quickly put this together, get Phil onto it, and have Phil work on this over the next couple of months.
Chair Martin.
Can I just ask for clarification? What committee are you
for? We're talking about putting a special committee together to deal with this specific topic.
Oh, not that we haven't yet. You're talking about
a new
doing it. Yeah.
Between now and the end of the year.
Chris Bond? Yeah, Legislator Erner mentioned that one of the organizations suggested that we do this. I'd really like to hear from them, hear what their suggestions are and hear their justification for it. So if something like that would be possible, I think that would help me a lot with this decision.
All right, now we have a motion and a second to postpone. All those in favor of postponements?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Two opposed. All right. Postponed. Thank you. And thank you, Legislator Erner. 6:55, can I have a motion?
Make a motion.
Second?
Aye.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 6:56, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 6:58, can I have a motion?
Aye.
Second? Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 660 is a bond. Can I have a motion? Second? Second. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carry. 664, also a bond. Can I have a motion? Second? Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carry. 667, can I have a motion? Second? Second. Discussion? Chair Bartow?
Yeah, so I don't know that we've gotten any additional information. Again, I have confidence that if this is the correct thing, that the next body will do this, but I'm not prepared to move compelling a split in terms of the property without yet having all the information, and most importantly, without yet owning the property. So that's where I'm at. I think it's, you know, one cart before the horse situation.
Mr. Camp?
Yeah, so, I'm basically the same thing. The thing that concerns me is that we're saying that, we're requesting an entity, another municipality, to do something with our resolution. We can't compel, the zoning board or planning board in the town of Ulster to make a subdivision of that parcel, even if we put it in our deed, right? If we put it in our, well, it's already sold, right? Sold or close to it?
Not close yet.
But even then, we would have to have agreement from the planning board and zoning board and the town board and the town of Ulster to do that, right? And we don't have that, I don't even know if anyone's asked them, if it's legal to do this on that, whatever the zone is for that parcel right now.
This would just start the process of immediately attempting to do that. Obviously, if it turned out that you couldn't, for some odd reason, it wouldn't be done. This is just the intent of the county to immediately, upon closing, start to subdivide so that we can keep this a living residence for a family in Ulster County. And I would just like to thank my Republican colleagues for attempting to help me keep a family in a house that they've lived at for years, a family with small children, and a family that I don't think any no vote here went and met and talked to. But once again, thank you to my Republican colleagues for trying to keep this family in this home and doing everything we can to not displace an Ulster County family.
Mr. Gale.
The other part of this is that we subdivide it and we put it on the market. Somebody buys it. You can't guarantee that that family's going to stay there. You can't guarantee that any family's going to stay there. They might turn it into an Airbnb. They might turn it into a restaurant. They might turn it in, knock it down, and put a car lot there, or self-storage, or a dental office, which is right next door, or a tattoo parlor, which is right across the street, or a construction company, which is right across the street, or a used car lot, which is right down the street, right? It's the only residential house for a mile into the south anyway, and probably half a mile, three quarters of a mile to the north on that road, right? That is not a residential neighborhood. And to think that because we want to compel the next owner to keep it a residential property, there's no guarantees that that happens. Even if everything that we're doing here comes to fruition, the town agrees, everything happens, goes up for sale, the guy buys it, knocks it down, he's going to store construction equipment there. Nothing we can do about that.
Same line.
First of all, there's another house or two right there. But and the family's happy, and they're in a home. Question through the chair by the way, there's a very easy way. If we can take multi-million-dollar pieces of property, transfer it to the EDA, and give it to billion-dollar corporations, I'm pretty sure we could find a way to work with this family. But question through the chair to Legislator Cato. I believe this is your district. These are your constituents. Did you go talk to them? I know it's the town of Ulster. Is it right on the edge?
No.
Right on the edge. Have you been over there?
No.
Okay.
I believe
Dean's for subdividing.
Mr. Erner.
So I just wanted to point out again that we had amended out the requirement that the county sell this at my request. So that's not a an additional requirement anymore. And I would certainly hope my intention with that and making that amendment in Public Works was precisely so that we would not be displacing the family. I refuse to be a part of that. If we're gonna buy a property with a house on it, then we're, in my opinion, obligated to not displace them. So maybe, you know, if that changes our mind about buying this property, then so be it. But I refuse to be part of displacing a family in this process.
As you know.
Yeah, I'd just like to underscore the Legislator Erner's comment and the reason that we made that, passed that amendment in Public Works is that we could really have an unintended consequence here in subdividing this property and then moving quickly to sale, that we might inadvertently make it more difficult for this family to remain. So if I think we should defeat this resolution, and we should maybe work in the direction, although that we should maybe consider whether we have to do a resolution indicating our preference that the family be allowed to stay if they want to, but we already have every indication from the executive's office and all the departments that would be involved that that's what they would want. So this is an extremely clear case of a solution for a non-problem that may actually create problems.
That's right, Mike.
You know, I get told a lot that I could be a little abrasive, that I can come on too strong, you get more bees with honey, and it just hasn't been my experience. As far as it's the executive's purview that this, that was not what I found when I went and knocked on the door. I found a young mother with three children that began to cry and thank me over and over again because no one has talked to her and her landlord keeps telling her she's got to go. That was just a couple of days ago. This is a young family, and I know we on the left side of the aisle seem to have moral high ground these days because we're the ones that always want to talk about housing. Money is no object. We throw money around and it's all for housing. It's all for services, and we pretend to care. But then when we have an actual house and an actual family that are in dire straits and begging for help, and just have a landlord basically telling them to get out, and we sit up here, and just the other day we talked about maybe needing office space, and sometimes I don't know how to be nice when there's a family that I'm in contact with that's crying, that doesn't know where they're going to go, and the people that claim to care about these people are talking about office space. And we can't possibly talk to these people. There's nothing we can do. It's just really something sometimes.
Mr. Roberts? Good. Mr. Cravel?
I just want to provide, because I to restate what I did at the last waiting room, which was that during the during the inspection of the property, our real estate agent did have a conversation with the tenant, and at that time the tenant told the listing our real estate agent that they were actively looking to purchase a house, and so they were out on the market looking to purchase a house. So just I want to just provide that information that there were points of contact with the family. Also, just to remind folks that you can have contiguous properties that are different parcels that still serve county use. That creation of a subdivision or an additional lot line is not, that's pretty common for how we operate as the county, but I do think what we're talking here about is an evaluation of the mechanics of doing a subdivision, then an evaluation of if folks want to say, if there's a highest and best use, all of those considerations. And then eventually the mechanism which would be required to do that, because there's not necessarily a clear way to get towards that purpose of towards housing, for the point of if it's marketed and sold to the highest to the price, the asking price, there's not a lot of mechanism for the county to have say over what is done on that property without additional work and mechanisms to do that.
That's right, Mark.
Yeah, so when the landlord
tells the family to get out, and then the realtor asks, what's your plan? You're going to say, we're looking. And that's what happened. They're desperate, and we're going to be the mean landlord soon, I guess. And there was talk right up until I really started going after this a week or two ago. There was lots of talk about office space and best use, and there was no conversation with this family. There still has not been, and it sounds like at some point our realtor asked, basically, when are you going to be out of here, is kind of what it sounds like was asked, and that's kind of the story that I got. And I just, if you, to be honest, deputy executive, my colleagues, anybody that wants to talk about this any further, I'm begging you, go over. Amanda, I would like you to go over respectfully, knock on the door, and then come back to this meeting and have some actual interaction with this individual rather than all of us just talking as if we know when we definitely don't, and we did not do what we could for a family. I mean, we're not showing any compassion here. There's things we can do. We move heaven and earth for developers, and we can't just go a little bit for this family. And it just really, the sixth floor bubble is thick on this one, and I'm sorry, I just got to be kind of like this about it. Sorry, everybody, I'm doing it again. But I just don't get it. I just don't get it. Why nobody here, we talked about this for weeks. Nobody can just, we've all driven past there. How many people have been to Adams? How many people have been to Dallas Hot Wieners there and Lake Katrina, whatever? Stop. Knock on the door. Talk to her. I bet if anybody does that, they're going to come back and they're going to act differently than they've been acting about this whole thing. I guarantee it.
Chair Martel.
I was going to say, since I'm not prepared to move on it tonight, if we want to postpone it, I don't know if in the interim the sale will happen, and then we'll be in a different place, but that's one of two ways that could go. So I don't know what the rest of the committee wants to do. I don't really know where the rest of the committee is on this, but I'm saying that I would be amenable to postponement if that's what the committee wants to do.
The deputy's saying February for closing.
Oh, February for closing. So,
is that a motion?
I mean, I guess I can make a motion to postpone.
Second?
I'll second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? One opposed. Okay, thank you. There's some forthcoming resolutions. Is there any new business? Any old business? Mr. Roberts? Mr. Roberts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last week in this very same room, I brought up the litigation between the executive office and the county comptroller. I had some concerns about the possible costs, outside attorneys, also how we got to where we're at today, and also how it affects county policy, and is there anything that we could do as a group, not to prevent this, but maybe prevent something like this happening in the future. And if I may, Mr. Chair, read something from a comptroller's latest brief that I received today. It says, respondents nonetheless argue that an unspecified county policy prohibits the disclosure of personal records to the comptroller's office. If such a policy existed, it would be contrary to the charter. In any event, respondents, that would be the county executive's office, have not identified any specific county policy and simply allege in the conclusion terms that one exists. if such a policy did in fact exist, respondents would have provided it. They did not. That is because there is no policy in place prohibiting the petitioner from accessing documents that the petitioner deems necessary. Now, as my colleague from Socrates says all the time, we are the policy makers of this government, and if such policy is out there, we should know about it. Thank you. Oh, let me finish up. I'm going to make a motion to enter executive session to discuss the litigation, and I ask that legislators, any council, the controller's office, the executive's office, and legislative staff be allowed to stay.
Second.
Can I ask for clarification? When you say the controller's office and the executive's office, you're saying everyone from the controller's office and everyone from the executive's office? Is that what you're...
I think they're immediate inner circle. I don't mean like Mr. Quigley was here. I don't know if he'd be considered part of the executive's office, but no, he shouldn't. Somebody like that should not be here.
So I need a second. Again.
You just seconded it?
Unless you have more clarification, I'll...
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, on the second, before we vote on it. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just ask for more clarification because we have half of the finance office leaving. We still have some finance. So yeah. Who from the executive's office?
Would you leave it up to each elected official who they would like here? That would be nice, but I'm sure they don't want
the mic.
Deputies, yes. I would, the immediate inner circle and the executive and the controller could define that inner circle.
We have to define, we're
right. Define an inner circle.
Yeah.
I would say deputies, executive, and deputy controller.
Controller Gallagher.
I really welcome the opportunity to talk about the case with the legislature. I don't necessarily think that I want to share our legal strategy with the executive team at this time. And I would like to have the management for my office, not just the deputy controller, but also the director of internal audit, since we've been working diligently together on this matter. But I defer to the body, and if we're going to keep opposing counsel and management from the executive's office in the room, I will present accordingly.
I will leave that up to counsel. If they recommend one department or one branch of government go at a time.
It's always great when we stump the attorneys. I love this.
I would just say that I'm Earl Redding from Romer Law and School of Health. If you're going to ask that the county executive's office be in there, that that would include me, and I think that's what the controller was alluding to when she was saying how about counsel.
We think both parties should be in there.
Okay.
I just want to go on record, and I think that this is inappropriate. County is in court, right? And we're now trying to interject ourselves into a proceeding outside of our body. I don't see the purpose of it. I just don't see the purpose of going into executive session. I don't see the purpose of having lawyers sitting here talking across each other for us. I don't get it. We know there's a disagreement, right? Personally, I don't want to know a whistleblower. I don't want to know who it is. I don't. And I don't think anybody should know who it is. Right? I am going to vote against executive session. I think it's inappropriate.
All right. Well, can we clarify first who's in the room? And
I just have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
About the whistle. Is anyone here planning on hearing about outing whistleblowers in executive session? I was not under the impression that whistleblower outing would have anything to do with this.
Hold on.
The exact terms used last week.
Let's decide who's going to be in and if we're going to vote to even do this. So let's one step at a time. So again, Mr. Roberts now hearing what the attorney is to say. who do you want to invite in? And we need to be specific.
I think we were very specific, the county controller and her deputy and county executive and any deputies that may be deemed responsible, and any counsel that would be counsel on our side and counsel from the executive's office and controller's office.
Okay, and I will second it. So any discussion on going into executive and who would be included in the executive session?
Yes, so I want to reiterate, so it's deputy, the controller, and the deputy controller, and then any deputies from the executive, and that's it. Is that what we're talking about?
That's the motion.
And counselors.
And counselors.
And lawyers, right?
Yep.
And I'm still no.
Okay. All right. All those in? The chair right now.
I feel conflicted about this. I've spoken with Legislator Roberts about this. I feel like the record exists. And we've read the record, but I will entertain going to executive session, but I'm stating on the record right now that once we're in executive session, depending on how it's going, I may vote to come out of executive session because I'm not necessarily comfortable creating a forum to litigate what's being litigated in a court. And I don't yet know what counsel, because we're going to hear from counsel for the executive's office, what they're going to say versus what the comptroller. It's just they've all made their arguments and they're actually written, and we circulated that. They're in writing. The arguments are in writing. So, it is session night, so we have caucus and we have a public hearing that's starting at 7 regardless. So, I will support going into executive session, but I'm going to be very tight about how long I support staying, depending on what's happening.
Mr. Hefner.
Yeah, I would say that I find it very concerning that this talk of whether or not there will be whistleblower identification, or there was conversations about there not being whistleblower identification in an executive session. I don't have a vote whether or not we go into it or not, but the whole thing seems a little bit concerning just based on how it's been broached to the committee. And I just want those comments to be on the record.
Thank you. That's great, Cam.
Thank you. So I want to reiterate what the chairman said. We have been given information from the executive's office. We've been given multiple files from the controller's office and the executive's office that if we took the time to read it, it would probably explain itself, right? And all we're going to have are people reciting what they've already given us, right? Again, I just think it's totally, totally inappropriate for us to be discussing something that is in litigation in the county. I think it's inappropriate. We don't do it for anything else. Why this? Why is this one so special that we want to talk about litigation involving the county? I just totally, totally think it's inappropriate. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to vote no. And if we do go into executive session, I'm going to leave the room.
That's fair enough.
I just want to clarify that all legislators also would be included in the executive session. And I agree with Legislator Cahill. I think that there is a forum for this kind of disagreement, and that forum has been sought, and the process has been put in motion. So, and if we want to say that we will encourage the parties to talk to each other, I think we can do that without an executive session,
Mr. Crisson.
I'm satisfied with all the information we got via email.
All right, so all those in favor of going into executive session, I guess I will support going through executive. Those opposed? Two opposed. Okay. We could clear the room of anybody else who was not on the list of invitees. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. All right. We're back on with the regular meeting. No motions were made during the executive session. There's nothing else. If we're going
to that caucus will start in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Your post bathroom break.
Motion to adjourn from Ways and Means.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor. Thank you.